Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. This is Alexander Malaket, President of Opus Advisory Services International. Welcome you once more to this latest episode of the Opus Advisory podcast series on international trade finance. For today's episode, we thought we would share with you some foundational principles and definitions around international trade finance and observe some key trends in the industry, as well as help identify a couple of sources of trade finance solutions which may be useful to you in the conduct of your business. While this episode is probably suited to end clients of trade finance providers, some of the observations in the following remarks might also be of interest to trade financiers and practitioners in our industry. It should be noted by way of context that small businesses across the globe, whether they be located in developed and advanced economies, or whether they be located in emerging markets or developing economies, have consistently identified financing, and in particular access to timely and adequately priced or fairly priced financing, as the single greatest obstacle to their growth and ongoing ability to maintain business. International trade and cross-border commerce shares an element of this in the sense that, depending on which source you cite or quote, somewhere between 80 to 90% of international trade flows are sustained and enabled in some way by some form of financing solution. So just as small businesses acknowledge the critical nature of financing in sustaining their ability to do business, those of us engaged in facilitating international commerce must also recognize that financing is a fundamental component of our ability to trade across borders. It should be noted also that as a result of the global crisis through which many of us continue to battle at this moment, the business of trade finance has attained a level of profile that is perhaps unprecedented in its history, certainly in at least the last two or three decades, if not longer. We've never been in a situation until recently where prime ministers of countries, presidents of countries, leaders of international institutions, foreign ministers, finance ministers, industry executives and leaders are all at some point or other discussing the importance of trade finance as an input to facilitating global trade, which is then meant to be one of the drivers of the global economic recovery. So from the perspective of trade finance, this is a moment in time where we certainly enjoy or benefit from a level of profile that is perhaps unprecedented in the history of this business. And so as a client of a trade finance provider, that level of profile can only benefit you if you're looking to secure innovative or effective trade financing solutions. In terms of the objectives of today's podcast episode, let's begin with a brief discussion of what trade finance entails. And in our writings and in our various presentations at Opus Advisory, we like to position trade finance as being based upon four primary pillars. The four pillars are the facilitation of payment across borders in an efficient, secure, and timely manner, the provision of financing solutions for a wide variety of commercial transactions across borders and crossing the most stable economic conditions and being equally responsive and effective in the most complex, high-risk circumstances that one is likely to encounter in international commerce. So the second pillar now being financing. The third pillar in the four that we identify around trade finance is risk mitigation or risk optimization, depending on how you look at it. Traditional trade finance instruments such as documentary letters of credit, in addition to others, are generating significant capability to mitigate and manage risk in international commerce, again, across a wide range of circumstances, across a wide range of market conditions, and in response to some very, very specific requirements at the industry sector level, at the transaction level, and at the market or economy level. So again, the third pillar being risk mitigation or risk optimization capability through trade finance. And finally, the fourth pillar, which is something a little bit more recent in the history of this business, but certainly I would suggest accelerating in its impact and importance, is the ability to facilitate the flow of information across borders between buyer and seller and any of the other stakeholders in the transaction, whether that information relates to the physical flow of the goods involved or the financial flow related to that underlying transaction. An implicit element of each of these four pillars, which we've been promoting certainly for the time that we've been in existence as an advisory firm, is this notion of advisory and expertise as a value added to trade finance. Some members of the profession will suggest that this is purely a transactional business, that it's primarily about these first four pillars, and that it's primarily kind of a banking or a financial structuring type of business. Others will take the view that advisory and expertise comprises a fundamental element of the value proposition of trade finance, and we certainly are proponents of and champions of that latter view, that there's a tremendous amount of expertise in the business of financing international trade, and that expertise should in some way be translated to advisory or expert support in enabling businesses conduct their trade across borders. So if we recap just briefly, the primary pillars of international trade finance from our perspective are the facilitation of secure and timely payment across borders, the facilitation of financing solutions involving or benefiting any of the parties involved in a transaction, really, whether it be the importer, the exporter, the financial institutions involved, potentially other members or parties to the global supply chain or global value chain that might benefit from a financing structure defined by a trade finance expert or proposed by a trade finance expert. Thirdly, risk mitigation or risk optimization, and that can take the form of transaction level instruments such as documentary letters of credit and the ability to confirm a documentary letter of credit, which really means shift the risk of that instrument from the bank that issued the instrument to a bank typically that is known to the exporter or the buyer, and that is again typically located in the country or the home country of that exporter, changing the profile of that transaction very favorably from the exporter's perspective. Risk mitigation also can extend beyond the instrument itself, or can be complemented in addition to whatever that instrument itself can provide through risk mitigation services provided by stakeholders in transactions such as export credit agencies, private sector insurers, and others. The fourth pillar, again, is the facilitation of information flow, and again, we suggest that that is relative to the flow of goods between buyer and seller, or the flow of the financial transaction that relates to that movement of goods, and that information, the criticality or the critical importance of that information flow is increasingly apparent when we start to think about the types of technology that support not only the physical flow of goods, but indeed the financial flows related to that. And we're thinking in particular here of RFID technology or radio frequency identification technology that literally permits buyers and sellers to track the position of a shipment on a real-time basis, and can allow control and security over a shipment at very granular levels. Similarly, from a financial perspective, the technology that underlies this on a global basis, we think in particularly here of SWIFT, which is an organization based in Brussels, and that provides an invaluable network, both communication network and financial flow network, that enables nearly instantaneous transfer of monies across borders, again on a secure, trusted, and an accurate basis to the benefit of buyer, seller, and all of the stakeholders involved in a trade finance or a trade transaction. From the perspective of a client, treasury executive, finance executive, whether in a large corporate entity or in a small business, looking at a first import-export transaction, from our perspective, it's useful to look at trade finance in terms of those four pillars to ensure that the requirements of buyer and seller are adequately balanced and addressed along those four pillars by the solutions provided or proposed by trade financiers or trade bankers, again, to the benefit of both buyer and seller. Finally, again, as an underpinning to those four pillars, we highlight the importance of the advisory support and the expertise that underpins the structuring of those solutions. And in fact, providers that are able to articulate a value proposition around advisory support and around expertise arguably can bring something to the table that others who are purely focused on the transaction may not be able to bring in terms of added value in favor of a client. It should be noted from a trend perspective and from an observation of what's going on in the industry that there has certainly been a shift, and this goes back to the first 2 or 3 years at least, before the crisis erupted, a shift from traditional instruments such as documentary credits, documentary collections, and others to what's termed open account trade, and in fact what's evolved into supply chain finance and supply chain based financing solutions. So rather than being transactional and instrument oriented, there is a movement to looking at things on an end-to-end basis across the supply chain, and that involves looking at the requirements of buyer and seller, as well as the overall supply chain, and seeing how possibly financing solutions can be structured to meet the requirements of all the parties that have a need, either from a financing perspective or from any of the three other pillars identified as pillars of trade finance. Historically, supply chain finance programs have been very much anchored in the needs of the buyer or the dynamics of the buyer, typically a large retail organization with global reach. Increasingly, however, there's a realization that the suppliers can take a significant role in shaping what a supply chain finance solution looks like. So again, it's starting to evolve into a much more holistic end-to-end perspective around what supply chain finance ought to be and how it ought to evolve. And the business processes, the products and solutions offered by various trade financiers, and the technology that underlies all of that are all evolving in that holistic sort of global direction that is looking across global supply chains, both in the consumer markets and in the manufacturing markets across the globe. In addition to these two first trends, the shift from traditional instruments to emerging instruments, additional focus on supply chain finance and taking an end-to-end view across the supply chain and including all of the various stakeholders and providers and participants in global supply chains, one of the other major trends that we should note is the increasing focus on and impact of regulatory and compliance requirements on not only financial services as a direct result of the global crisis, but certainly anything that involves cross-border business, international banking, and international trade finance. The regulatory and compliance trends touch a wide range of issues, including what's referenced commonly in the industry as KYC, which is the Know Your Client rule, and in fact, or Know Your Customer rule. And in fact, that KYC, what some refer to as a KYC burden, is requiring international trade financiers to become much more aware of the transactions which they support and sustain and enable. In fact, they're not only required to know their own customers, be they importer or exporter, but they're also required increasingly to get to know the counterparty. In other words, their client's business partner, either a buyer or supplier halfway across the globe. And that is presenting some significant challenges, particularly if that counterparty is located in a market where information flow is limited, where things like credit reports and credit analyses, financial statements, which are taken for granted in certain markets of the world, just are simply either not available or quite candidly not trustworthy in some of those other markets. And so that KYC burden is, or that KYC regulatory requirement is proving to be quite challenging to some providers of trade finance. On another level, and again, this directly linked to the recent crisis, there is increasing pressure on financial services organizations to ensure that they maintain adequate capital reserves against the loans and financings which they provide to the marketplace. And this pressure to ensure adequate reserve is driving a significant effort to develop and evolve a regulatory framework that provides a greater security to depositors and investors in the financial sector, while at the same time limiting potentially the amount of capital that's available to be lent, and therefore limiting the amount of financing that can be made accessible in the marketplace. There is, in the space of trade finance, a rigorous debate underway at the moment about the treatment of trade finance liabilities and how they ought to be handled from a regulatory capital and reserve perspective. The industry argues that trade finance has an excellent loan loss history, which means very limited loan loss history, and that the nature of the transactions typically involved relate directly to the flow of hard goods, and are self-liquidating in nature are contingent in nature. In other words, there's only a financial liability at some level of the transaction if the flow of goods somehow gets disrupted. If the transaction evolves as it's intended to, there is really no liability from a financial perspective other than the need to settle the transaction as had been initially arranged. There are, of course, nuances and complexities around that statement, but just as a broad guideline, it remains true that there is a rigorous and vigorous debate in the trade finance business around that whole capital reserve issue. From the perspective of a client, whether you are an executive in a large company or a small business pursuing a first international transaction, all of these issues, all of these trends have very direct impact on the nature of the capital that would be available to finance your international trade transactions, the likelihood that a particular financial institution or provider will choose to do business with a certain segment of the market, whether it's a small business, whether it's a small business that is relatively newly established, just depending on the risk profile, not only of a particular business, but of the overall transaction. The regulatory and compliance issues, clearly, this whole KYC requirement, the more that a client is capable of and willing to provide transparency to their bankers and trade finance providers, the more likely that trade financiers can make the case internally in support of a particular financing proposal or a particular risk mitigation requirement. So that notion of transparency, the notion of working with trade financiers and trade bankers as partners in helping them understand your transaction and your requirements so that they can also adequately assess the risk and determine whether that risk profile is acceptable to them at the institution level, can only serve the interests of all involved, including a commercial and corporate end client. In terms of sources of trade finance, there are a variety of sources of such solutions. Clearly, banks and financial institutions are among the most commonly and quickly thought of providers of such solutions. There are certainly non-bank providers, including niche trade finance firms, hedge funds, which were certainly in the pre-crisis timeframe increasingly looking at trade finance as an interesting line of business. It should be said that from a hedge fund perspective, there was a certain amount of focus on emerging markets trade business, but nonetheless, depending on the types of transactions that you might be looking at, as a non-bank provider, there might be some possibilities within this group of institutions. In addition to those groups, there are clearly export credit agencies, which are quasi-public sector institutions. Certainly the history of an export credit agency in Europe, post-war Europe, is that these were public sector entities mandated to facilitate and support export development from various economies. Increasingly, these ECAs are either semi-private or have since been fully privatized. And so the models of export credit agencies that operate across the globe vary significantly from one to the other. So it's advisable to do a little bit of research and determine which ECA might be best positioned to respond to a particular set of requirements, might be best positioned to be able to support and be aware of certain markets across the globe, and might be inclined, for example, to service an SME client versus a multinational client. So certainly a little bit of analysis and research around ECA models is useful in terms of sourcing trade financing solutions. Additionally, it's worth noting that international financial institutions have been active in the trade finance business for quite some time. Generally, there's an international development mandate or motivator underneath all of that. However, the activities of these international institutions have also increased since the course of the crisis has evolved. The World Bank's International Finance Corporation has recently hit a milestone in terms of the level of trade finance that it has sustained and supported. The Inter-American Development Bank, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, the Asian Development Bank, and others are quite active in that space. And so the Islamic Development Bank is another. And so, again, from the perspective of sourcing trade finance, whether these international financial institutions provide the financing directly or whether they provide guarantee schemes that enable other financial institutions to take on the financing responsibility, it's worth looking at those as potential sources of financing solutions, and again, communicating those to your primary providers as potential partners in a financing structure or solution. So from a trade finance perspective, we've just had a very brief overview of some of the principles which underlie trade finance, and a couple of suggestions from an end client perspective on things to consider in looking at trade finance and in engaging with trade finance providers. Trade finance is an esoteric field of business. It's not terribly well understood, even within a financial institution. In fact, I go so far as to say that most domestically focused bankers have a very, very limited understanding of what trade finance is. And so as a company either engaged in or seeking to pursue international opportunities, the critical importance of communicating your requirements, your objectives, and your expectations of a trade financier cannot be overstated. And the advantages of working with a trade finance provider, in helping them make the case internally to support your transactions, to help meet your requirements, cannot be overstated either. In keeping with our approach on other podcast episodes, we'd like to offer now one insight and one resource to close out on this podcast episode. The insight goes back to an observation that's been repeated once or twice over the course of this podcast, which is, as a company, whether you are a small business, a mid-corporate, or a large multinational, it behooves you, it's very much to your advantage to work closely with your trade finance bankers and suppliers to articulate the requirement that you have, help them understand the nature of your business and your objectives, candidly express the risks as you believe them to be, provide some transparency on your counterparties overseas, and therefore help those trade financiers to make the case in favor of supporting your trade finance transaction internally within their own institution, and then, as the case may arise, with export credit agencies, IFIs, and other partners with whom the financial services provider might work to try to respond to your requirements. In terms of a resource that might be of particular use, it's worth mentioning explicitly that most financial institutions that are active in the business of trade finance will maintain a web presence specifically focused on trade finance, and within that, many will have downloadable guides on trade finance. And if you're having difficulty finding those, please do get in touch with us and we'll be happy to help gather a few of those for you. They are quite easily available, and the leading providers of trade finance solutions certainly will make those available to both existing clients and, frankly, to prospective clients as well. So certainly those bank trade finance guides are excellent resources to begin doing some basic research and gathering some fundamental understanding of what trade finance is about. One additional resource that we'd like to share with you and point you to is the International Chamber of Commerce website. The ICC plays an absolutely fundamental role in enabling trade across borders, whether we think about the publications which they've created that guide the transaction level of trade finance, such as the Uniform Customs and Practice, now on to its version or publication 600, as well as other similar quasi-regulatory publications related to other instruments of trade finance. Think about things like the international commercial terms that determine the transfer of ownership of a shipment, the responsibility to insure a shipment, and the risk in transit, all of those sorts of things. The ICC is fundamentally engaged in the whole international trade and trade flow across borders. And so their website, the ICC WBO.org, is an excellent resource from a trade finance and international trade perspective more broadly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us for this latest episode of the Opus Advisory Services podcast series. This is Alexander Malaket. I thank you for your time and for joining us once more, and I invite you to come back and join us again in about 10 days or 2 weeks' time when we post the next episode of the Opus Advisory Services Spotlight Trade Finance series. If you'd like to discuss any of the foregoing with us further or in more detail, please visit our website, www.opus-advisory.com, or you're welcome to email me directly at ar.malaket, M-A-L-A-K-E-T, opus-advisory.com. Thank you very much, and have a good afternoon. Bye for now.